Hello.
Hello.
Is this Amy?
Yes.
Oh, I'm glad to talk to you. I called you because I work with your mother down at the office.
Uh-huh.
Are you aware that she got a big promotion?
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, it's great. We're so happy for her. And so a bunch of us at the office decided to maybe buy her a nice gift.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I really don't know what she likes or what would be a good gift for her. And I thought, well, maybe I could call you and you could go shopping with me and suggest something that we could get for her. How does that sound? Yeah, I thought, well, we could go down to the mall, you know, and sometime maybe after school and just walk through the shops. And if you see something that you think she might like, we could buy it. And if there's something left over, we'd get a gift for you, too. How do you like that?
Okay, yeah.
Now, this is a secret, so we're going to surprise her. So don't tell anybody about this. My idea is maybe we meet in the afternoon down at the mall, and then we can just go from there. Can you think you can find me?
Mm-hmm, yeah, I can.
Well, thanks a lot, Amy. I look forward to doing some shopping for your mom. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Murder, a primal evil that lurks in mankind. In all of us, the ability. In some of us, the drive. Some killers are caught and brought to trial. Others escape justice to live and die in infamy. These individuals are examined here on MurderCast. MurderCast deals with mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Bay Village, Ohio, an affluent beachfront area on the shores of Lake Erie, located on the west side of Cleveland, with a population of 17,000. It is in this insulated neighborhood where Mark and Margaret Mihaljevic were raising their two children in the fall of 1989. 11-year-old Jason and 10-year-old Amy. Amy Mihaljevic was a bright fifth grader at Bay Middle School, where she excelled in academics, sports, and extracurricular activities like swimming. Amy possessed a great love of animals and had been taking horse riding lessons at the Holly Hill Farms riding stables. In October of 1989, Amy received a phone call.
Hello?
A man's voice, a friendly voice, asked for her by name. The man explained that he worked with her mother at Trading Times and that her mother had just received a promotion. Good news. He needed help in picking out a present for her mother. Would Amy be able to help him with that?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, good. And listen, with any money that's left over, we can get something for you.
Oh, wow, okay.
Would you like that, Amy?
Yeah.
Good. Why don't you meet me at the shopping center next week, and we can go shopping together, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Oh, and by the way, this will be a surprise, so let's just keep this our little secret. A week later, on Friday, October 27th, 1989, Amy gets ready for school, donning her horse riding boots, a white nylon jacket, and her favorite jewelry, jade earrings in the shape of horse heads. She leaves for school with her backpack, riding her blue bicycle as she usually did. In a few minutes, she meets two of her schoolmates, and the trio continue the rest of the way to Bay Middle School.
Well, good morning, everyone. Does anyone know what a policeman does before we start on our safety talk? What does a policeman do? Make sure people are safe, okay? And that's the reason why I'm here today. Let's talk a little bit about stranger danger. Before we talk about the dangers of strangers, what is a stranger? Does anyone know what a stranger is? What's a stranger?
That day, a police officer, Mark Spetzel, presents a stranger danger talk to Amy's class, informing the students about the dangers that people unknown to them present and what they should do if a stranger approaches them.
All right, did you hear all that? That grown-ups very rarely need help from children, okay? So grown-ups ask other grown-ups for help, okay? Very good tip to know.
School is let out just after 2 p.m. Amy leaves her bicycle at the school bike rack and walks a short distance to the Bay Village Square shopping center. This is where she is to meet her mother's friend and go shopping. Directly across from the shopping center sits the Bay Village Police Department. At 3 p.m., two witnesses, both classmates of Amy, see Amy waiting for someone at the shopping center, playfully passing the time by swinging around a pole.
Amy?
Then, a man calls out her name. Walking up to her, putting his arm around her, and whispering something in Amy's ear. The witnesses assume this man dressed in a beige coat is Amy's father. And they continue to watch the pair as they walk off through the parking lot, eventually losing sight of them. This is the last time Amy is seen alive. Because Amy's mother does not typically arrive home from work until after 5 p.m., 3 hours after school ends, she routinely has her children call her once they get home in order to check in. When her son Jason calls at 3 p.m., he informs her that Amy has not yet arrived home from school. This doesn't immediately trouble Amy's mother. In a few minutes, Amy finally calls her mother at work to check in, and the uneasy feeling subsides as her mother assumes Amy is calling from home. Amy mentions there were choir tryouts after school today, and she stayed after to attend them. The conversation continues.
How was school? Good? What are you doing? Nothing much. I'll be home in a bit. Do you need anything? No. Okay, I'll see you soon. Okay, bye, Mom.
The conversation ends, and Amy's mother focuses back on her work. Some time passes, and she begins to feel uneasy. Something did not seem right in her conversation with Amy. In retrospect, this phone call was likely placed while Amy was in the company of her kidnapper, keeping a close eye and ear on Amy, making sure she did not reveal their secret. Whether a mother's intuition or the stilted manner in which Amy interacted over the telephone, her mother begins to think something is wrong. This gut feeling becomes so strong that Amy's mother decides to leave work early in order to check on her children. At 4 p.m., Amy's mother arrives and discovers her daughter is not at home. Her son tells her that Amy had never returned home from school that day. With panic now beginning to set in, she immediately drives to Bay Middle School in search of her daughter. There, she finds Amy's bicycle, still in the bike rack. But where is Amy?
Vance, information on a missing juvenile last seen 4290 at 0745 hours, brown and brown, 410, 95 pounds, and was seen by Francis, who now missing. Any information, contact detectives or Wilshire Watch Commander at 5990.
Wasting no time, she calls the police to report her daughter, Amy, is missing. By now, it is 6 p.m.
Just find her. Tell her to come home. Whatever is wrong, whatever is wrong, just have her come home.
Police and Amy's father search for the missing blonde-haired, brown-eyed girl, frantically combing the neighborhood in all directions. At only 4'10" and just under 90 pounds, Amy is slight, and the search encompasses some of the locations she is known to visit, including Huntington Park and Holly Hill Farms riding stables, where Amy took riding lessons. February, 3 months later, and 50 miles or 80 kilometers from Bay Village, a jogger, out for her usual morning run in Ashland County, spots something just off County Road 1181. The jogger slows down and cautiously approaches. Partly obscured by the snow, which has now begun to melt away, lies Amy's body. The jogger is shocked and runs to a nearby house, asking them to call the police, exclaiming she's just come across a human body.
OJD 13, morning 17-13, come in.
Authorities arrive on the scene and get to work collecting evidence, bagging and labeling any items in the vicinity where Amy's body was found. The subsequent autopsy conducted finds that Amy was likely killed at a different location within 24 hours of her disappearance. Then, her body moved to the location where it was found. She suffered blunt force trauma to the head, 3 stab wounds to the side of her neck, and 1 stab wound to her chest, post-mortem. Amy's fingernails are broken and jagged, indicating she valiantly fought her attacker. Perhaps not surprising, Amy had likely been sexually assaulted by some sort of object, her body apparently being redressed at some point after the attack. Her riding boots, white windbreaker jacket, and distinctive jade horse head earrings were not found with her body. Had the killer kept these items as mementos? Or had they been discarded along the way during Amy's kidnapping and murder? Hey, do you remember a few weeks ago when I started taking Magic Mind? That matcha-based energy shot infused with adaptogens I was taking to combat brain fog and fatigue? I started feeling the effects of it almost immediately. I started feeling really dialed in, and I was really able to focus on my work. In part, thanks to the nootropics that enhance cognitive performance. Well, just in the past 3 weeks that I've been taking it, I've noticed a big difference in my energy level and my overall mood. I'm consistently feeling more animated, optimistic, which honestly is what I need when I'm working on a podcast like this. And if it works this well for me, why don't you give it a try? I have a 20% off code to share with you guys. It's MurderCast20, and to use it, you can go to magicmind.co/MurderCast and enter the code MurderCast20 at checkout. And the best part is, they have a money-back guarantee, so you risk nothing. If you get the subscription, you get 40% off. Remember, my 40% off code only lasts 10 days, so take advantage. Investigators begin interviewing witnesses, including the two classmates who saw Amy meet a well-dressed man in a beige jacket at the shopping center. They create police sketches of this man from the witness descriptions and begin compiling a list of suspects. Though Amy was told to keep her meeting with her kidnapper a secret, she did mention to some classmates that she was meeting a friend at the shopping center near school to purchase a gift for her mother. These classmates relayed the information about the phone calls to police. As police investigate this lead, they discover that this same person had been calling a number of girls from the neighboring area of North Olmsted after they arrived home from school. North Olmsted, Ohio, is an area just south of Bay Village, where Amy lived. These phone calls were all similar, with the caller saying he knew their mother, attempting to gain the child's trust, and asking to meet. Amy had not been the only child that was targeted. In fact, one of these girls that received a phone call had actually left her home, intending to meet this caller, but a neighbor prevented her from doing so after asking where the child was headed. When the child responded she was meeting a man who called her on the phone, the neighbor became suspicious and waited with the child until her parents arrived home. What would have happened to this little girl if the concerned neighbor had not gotten involved? How did the person calling know personal information like where Amy's mother worked? Did he know the family? And how did the caller know the names and phone numbers of these children? Disappointingly, in 1989, only long-distance phone call records were kept, and since these calls were local, no information as to where they originated could be obtained. One possible connection is the Lake Erie Nature and Science Center, which Amy and other girls who received phone calls were known to frequent. At the time, the center had a guest book where visitors would write down their names and telephone numbers. It would be a simple matter for a person having access to this book to glean information from it and call the students listed therein. One suspect that had access to this logbook was Dean Runkle, a science teacher in nearby Amherst. Runkle volunteered at the Lake Erie Nature and Science Center during this time and lived with his parents, only 2 miles away from where Amy's body was found. In addition, Runkle looks very similar to the composite drawings of Amy's abductor, and a witness to Amy's kidnapping even picked out Runkle from a photo lineup. With a history of investigations for inappropriate sexual interactions with students and minors, Runkle, who was close to retirement, refused to give his fingerprints to the school district when new policies were instigated that required fingerprinting for all teachers. Instead, opting to abruptly move to Key West, Florida, forsaking a valuable pension. Another suspect who attracted the attention of investigators was Vern Hartenberg, who also had a close connection to the Nature and Science Center as the director of the Metro Parks for the area. With a history of exposing himself and attempted assault, Hartenberg curiously committed himself to a mental institution only 10 days after Amy was abducted. What was the reason for this mental breakdown? A different connection to Amy involves a math teacher, at North Olmsted Middle School. Hailing from the same vicinity where other phone calls were placed, this person was the brother of Amy's riding instructor at Holly Hill Farms Stables. And he also resembled the FBI composite sketches of the kidnappers. There were more suspects. Harold Bounds, the son of the owner of Holly Hill Farms, and Vietnam vets suffering from PTSD. Kenneth Stanton, a man with severe mental issues and a history of sexually assaulting young girls with the same approach as Amy's kidnapper. Stanton later died while in prison for these assaults. Richard Holbert, a mentally disturbed individual who, in the middle of a Sunday mass at a church, screamed that he was responsible for Amy's death. This confession was later proven false, as Holbert was actually institutionalized at the time of Amy's kidnapping. Robert Ivan Nichols, who committed suicide in 2002 and was discovered to have stolen an 8-year-old child's identity. The list goes on, but ultimately, no one has been charged with Amy's kidnapping and murder. While disappointing, the investigation is ongoing.
This evidence we're going to show you today, we believe, is from the place where this happened, where the homicide occurred. We need this identified in order to figure out where that happened, and from there, figure out who the perpetrator is. These two items, it's a curtain and it's a blanket, submitted for forensic analysis, found canine hairs on those items, and therefore, we believe those hairs from the Mihaljevic dog Jake were transferred from Amy's clothing to these two items, which we believe were used to wrap around Amy's body from wherever the original homicide scene occurred.
In 2016, Mark Spetzel, the same police officer that presented the Stranger Danger talk to Amy and her class on the day she was kidnapped, relayed new evidence. Spetzel is now chief of police at Bay Village and has doggedly pursued Amy's kidnapper for all these years. Spetzel, along with retired FBI agent Phil Torsney, displayed a homemade avocado green curtain and blanket tied to Amy's murder. The curtain and blanket, though not found in the immediate area of Amy's remains, were connected to the crime by dog hair. At the time of her disappearance, Amy owned a dog. Dog hairs found on this curtain and blanket matched samples taken from Amy's pet dog in 1989. This could indicate that Amy's body was wrapped in the curtain and blanket before being laid on the side of the road.
Well, 31 years ago today, the body of a missing girl from Bay Village was found in a farm field in Ashland County.
Now, more than three decades later, investigators have yet to charge anyone in the kidnapping and killing of Amy Mihaljevic. But the Five on Your Side investigators recently uncovered newly filed court records showing investigators focusing in on a potential suspect.
These are the sworn statements from the lead investigator with Bay Village Police. In them, he says a woman came forward 2 years ago and identified her former boyfriend as a suspect in Amy Mihaljevic's murder.
According to an affidavit filed last fall, the woman told investigators she lived with the man less than a mile and a half from the shopping center where Amy was last seen.
Even more recently, in 2021, on the 31st anniversary of the discovery of Amy's body, a new suspect emerged. Police say a woman came forward in 2019, claiming that her ex-boyfriend is Amy's killer. This woman lived with the man less than 2 miles from the shopping center where Amy's abduction took place. And he had a niece, the same age as Amy, as well as other family members in Bay Village. She went on to claim that On the night Amy disappeared, the man never came home. Instead, he called her, asking if she had seen the news about Amy's kidnapping. Gold fibers were found on Amy's body, and at the time, this man drove a gold Oldsmobile with a tan interior. His car was spotted in the exact area Amy's body was found, as FBI agents recorded the license plate numbers of all the cars that passed near the scene, in case the killer returned to the scene of the crime, as they so often do. Most interestingly, a pair of witnesses to Amy's kidnapping picked the man out of a photo lineup as the man they saw with Amy 31 years ago, when she was last seen alive. With all this circumstantial evidence, authorities requested the man come in to talk to police. Not only did he agree to talk to police, but he also agreed to a DNA swab and polygraph test, of which results showed deception in answering some key questions. Even more suspicious, the man agreed verbally to allow investigators to search his storage unit, but then did not sign the paperwork allowing them to do so. Regardless, investigators obtained a warrant and searched his storage unit, confiscating evidence. Though the man conceded that 1989 was a dark period in his life, and that he may have called Amy prior to her abduction, there has been no further movement on this suspect, and authorities would not comment on the status. Still, the investigation continues. Though a partial DNA profile was extracted from the crime scene, the sample is not complete, making Amy's killer impossible to identify through DNA at this time. Investigators are hopeful that with DNA technology advancing so quickly and leading to numerous cold case arrests in recent years, a day will soon come when this evidence is enough to bring justice to Amy and her family.
Well, what a community. I mean, to be to have that kind of involvement and that kind of concern.
Are you optimistic?
Oh, yeah, I've never lost hope.
They're going to find your killer.
Oh, yeah, they will. They will. They will.
Sadly, Amy's mother passed away in 2001. From complications due to lupus and chronic alcoholism, perhaps never being able to cope with the tragedy that struck her family. Even though she was doing all the right things, raising her children in a safe neighborhood, having them check in after school to track their whereabouts, and having them attend Stranger Danger education, somehow bad things happen to good people. Somehow, Amy was abducted right in front of the police station, and on the same day, she was warned about the peril that strangers pose. It's enough to make a person cynical and pessimistic. But Amy's mother, Margaret, did not want us to succumb to the darkness we sometimes find ourselves in, and encouraged us to persevere in the face of the abyss.
I thank one and all for your support, your love, and your concern, without which I would not have been able to make it through this past year. Let's fill the void that her passing has left with positive thoughts, with a smile on our face, and say she blessed our life for a while. Unfortunately, she is gone, but now we must live on.
There is a $25,000 reward offered in this case. And if you have information about the kidnapping and murder of Amy Mihaljevic, please call 1-800-CALL-FBI. Thank you for listening to MurderCast.